Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi, everyone. This is Robert Flashman, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hey, guys. Before we get into the episode, I want to let you know that Robert Flashman, who is today's guest, amazing songwriter and vocalist, is going to be appearing at a breast cancer research event for charity. And it's going to be on February 19th in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, at Ziggy's for Beatty's Music Garden Reunion. And he's the MC for this event, so it should be pretty cool, and it's for a great cause. So I highly recommend you check it out. I'm going to post a link in today's show notes that'll provide you with more information about this event that Robert is going to be participating in. Cool. Now into the episode.
Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast, home of all things hard rock and heavy metal. I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. Now, let's get things started with the Talking Metal theme song, written by Rob Halford, Metal Mike, and Roy Z.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of the Talking Metal Podcast, and on today's episode, the one and only Robert Flashman, who is known for his work in a lot of different things, and we're going to talk to him about everything that he's done throughout his career. But the one thing that really turned me onto this guy was his work on the Vinnie Vincent Invasion record, one of my favorite records from 1986. Such a great, great album by the former guitarist of Kiss, Vinnie Vincent, and Robert was heavily involved in that record. And as a co-host on today's episode, we have the one and only Mitch LaFon from One on One with Mitch LaFon. Hey, Mitch, how are you?
Good, good. Always a pleasure to chat. Love doing these talk-ups with you. And, of course, Robert is a great storyteller. I interviewed him back on episode 161 of One on One. So you're going to love, folks, you're going to love listening to what he has to say.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people don't realize how heavily involved he was with Journey, writing one of their biggest songs, or at least co-writing it. Wheel in the Sky is a song that he has a co-write on, and he left the band before they released it, and Steve Perry is, you know, the voice that came in and made that song famous, but that is Robert's song, essentially, and went on to just do so much great songwriting on that first Vinnie Vincent Invasion record. Were you a fan of that record?
Vinnie Vincent Invasion? No. You know, Vinnie writes great songs. Back on the Streets, the other stuff he's done with Kiss, all great stuff, you know. but I just never liked his guitar playing. He didn't play for the song to me. It was just all over the place, like a, I don't want to say a herd, but a, like bumblebees, you know, like a hive of bumblebees that falls to the ground and they all go flying around like crazy. I don't like that album.
Yeah, I was a big fan of the songwriting on the record. I mean, the guitar playing, it is rather ridiculous, and there had been rumors back in the day that Vinny had sped up the tape on that record, and we're actually going to ask Robert about that in the interview, and we'll see what he has to say about that. But I thought the songs were really great, and I, again, I'm just a big fan of Robert's voice, and just loved that record. I remember at one of the local record stores in my area, they gave away a free Pink single, which had Boys Are Gonna Rock on it, and it was free at the record store, and I still have that somewhere, and I just loved that so much that I was there the first day it came out to buy the full record, the Vinnie Vincent Invasion, and side one on that record I just thought was just great from start to finish. And side two was good too. Side two had Back on the Streets and I Want to Be Your Victim, which I like those two songs quite a lot. Do You Want to Make Love? Actually, I take it back. I really like side two too. So anyways, without
30 years, the album.
Yeah,
right?
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. 30 years old. And
wow.
It's a classic for me. I know you don't. You're so on it, but it's a classic for me. So it's an honor to talk to Robert about that record and many other things. So without further ado, let's get into the interview that I conducted just recently with Robert, and then we're going to come back and talk some more with Mitch Lafon. Hey, this is Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and we are very honored because on the line we have the legendary vocalist and songwriter, Robert Fleischman. How are you doing tonight, Robert?
Fine, Mark. Thank you for inviting me to your show.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. As a kid, there were certain records that just meant the world to me and really stood out from the bunch, and one of those records was the Vinnie Vincent Invasion, that first record that Vinny did after leaving Kiss, and you were just an enormous part of it. And one of the things that, you know, just sucked me in was your voice. So it's just a real honor to finally, after all these years, be able to speak with you. And before we go back and talk about all your amazing history, because there is quite a bit of it that is absolutely worth talking about, I want to talk to you about what's going on with you right now. In recent years, you've had The Sky, and I know you guys put out two records. Will there be anything on the way from the sky coming out, or are you working on any solo material? What is Robert up to now in 2016?
Well, I was going to have a Sky album come out this year, but I've decided not to, and I'm going to do a solo album with a lot of my friends through the years that I've known, and we've talked about doing these things like get together and play, and we never did, but I'm corralling a lot of my friends up and going to do a solo album and start recording hopefully in April and May in Los Angeles. And I have my good friend Frankie Benelli from Quiet Riot playing in drums.
Oh, one of my favorite drummers. Yeah. Amazing.
Help me out. Yeah. And Dean Castanova from Journey.
Wow.
He's going to play on a track.
He's in Bad English too, I think, right?
I guess he played with Journey. All I know, and yeah. he played with Ozzy. He played with everybody, pretty much.
Cool.
And then I'm going to have Bobby Rock, who plays with Leah Ford and played with on the Vinnie Vincent album.
Right.
The Invasion album. And then guitar wise, I'm going to have George Lynch is going to be playing on it.
Wow.
My friend Rusty Anderson, who plays guitar for Paul McCartney. My other friend, Monty Pittman, who plays guitar with Madonna, and what's it, Prong.
Prong,
heavy metal.
Yeah.
And plus we used to write together, and he's a terrific guitar player and great person. And then some other guitar players that I can't say right now.
Okay.
I haven't confirmed yet. And bass-wise, I'm going to have Tony Franklin play.
Wow, these are just amazing players you're mentioning. Yeah.
Yeah, and let me see. And Chip's Enough from Enough's Enough.
Love
and,
Chip, yeah.
Some other people that are going to be involved bass-wise. And a really incredible keyboard player will be on there that I... He used to be in a band called The Nice.
Okay.
Hopefully he'll come on board.
Now, how far along into it are you? Are you writing songs? Are you already tracking stuff? You know,
well, right now I've written about 30 songs, and I'm still writing, and I'm going to pick the best out of them all. And I'm kind of songs are sort of designated for certain players, and so I'm kind of writing in that frame of mind.
Wow. Okay. And so if you're having like a George Lynch playing a song, that we might expect that to be like a little harder rock, maybe a heavier edge.
Yeah.
To it.
Well, it's going to be really a hard rock, spacey, melodic, interesting blend of music. I played it for a guy who's representing me, and I hadn't shared any of the body of music to anyone, and I played that to him first, and he was pretty knocked out. So
cool.
I think it's going to be pretty good.
Excellent. Now, yeah. I mean, your songwriting goes back a ways, and one of the really greatest classic rock songs, we call it classic rock now, that has just continues to live on, and you know, young kids love it, and it's still just as vibrant and alive today as it was back when you wrote it, is a song called Wheel in the Sky, and by the great band Journey.
Pretty lucky there.
Yeah, that you were a part of, by Journey, that you were a part of. And I kind of wanted to go back, because there were others, Anytime, I think you wrote too, right? You were involved in writing that one?
Yeah, and Winds of March.
Okay.
All for You.
Wow. So there's some songwriting that went on with Journey, and also some performing. Can we go back to Journey and talk about how you ended up in that band, maybe your musical path leading up to the point where you ended up in Journey?
Yeah, it's quite a long story. I had a manager, his name was Barry Fay, and he called me up while I was playing in a band in Chicago, and said that he had heard a tape of mine, and that as he was interested in talking to me and seeing if I'd like to sort of, you know, hit the big time, say. And so I went to Colorado, and I met with him. And I was there in Colorado for like about 2 weeks meeting with Barry. And then he asked me if I'd be interested in doing a showcase for CBS Records. And I said, yeah. So I put together a bunch of musicians in Colorado. I didn't know anybody, but I had one friend who happened to live there, and he helped me out. And finding musicians, and I assembled a band, and I wrote about 7 songs in about a week's time, and then all these CBS people came to this theater in Colorado, and I performed. And 3 days later, I got a call and asked if I'd be interested coming to Los Angeles, where I'm originally from, and I had a meeting with them, and they said they had this band called Journey, and that they wanted to put a lead singer in front of them. And they said, would you be interested in going to San Francisco? And I went up to San Francisco, and I met with them. We talked for an hour or so, and then we had some lunch, and then we got up on stage, and we just started jamming, and we played for like about 2 hours or so, and it was pretty incredible chemistry that happened there.
Wow.
And then I started writing songs with them. And
when you say them, who actually was in Journey at that point? Actually, obviously, cool. Neil Sean. Was Steve Smith involved in at that point?
No. It was Ainsley Dunbar.
Okay, right,
with
sure.
David Bowie and Zappa. And
Whitesnake, yeah.
John Mayall and, you know, everybody. In England and in the States.
Right.
He was an amazing drummer. And I loved him. He was a great guy. Greg Raleigh was playing keyboards, Ross Valerie on bass, and Neil Sean on guitar.
Right. Well,
they were a jazz rock fusion band for many years with, you know, 15-minute songs and everything. So, you know, me starting to write songs that were, you know, in 4/4 time and under 4 minutes or 5 minutes, it was kind of, you know, I sort of rearranged the furniture there, but
right.
It was a great experience, and it was, you know, a learning experience for me and them, you know.
So was there,
after that, they never went back into doing, you know, such long songs.
Right on. And had they, before you joined the fold, kind of said, hey, decided that we're going to go a different direction? Or is this something that you kind of suggested to them once you were in the fold with them?
Well, once I was in with them, I'm a lead singer. I needed that form, that background for everything to work, you know, to write songs to. So they had to completely change. I mean, it was odd for me to go, hey, Ainsley, can you, you know, play 4/4 now straight?
Right.
You know,
right.
it was really hard for, it was a psychological challenge for, you know, for them. And it was for me too, because here, you know, these guys are some of the greatest musicians, you know, in the South Bay and, you know, United States pretty much, you know?
Sure.
And here I am, you know, just fresh out of the box, just telling them, giving them direction, but that's what happened, and you know, that's in history, you know, proved itself here, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And the songs that you have a songwriting credit on, again, some really big classic songs, were those songs that you guys kind of came up with together, or were those ideas you brought into them? How did the songwriting process go?
Well, for Wheel in the Sky, I was given lyrics from everybody and asking me, can you do something with these lyrics and put them, you know, make something with them? And there was nothing that really grabbed me or, you know, triggered me to into any muse to write anything. And I felt bad saying, no, I haven't done anything yet, and da 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 da. But Ross Valerie gave me a poem that his wife had written, and there were some. I didn't like the poem, but there was one line about wheels are turning or something like that, and right. I just adapted it to "Wheel in the Sky Keeps on Turning."
Right,
and cool. I was with Neil, and we were, I guess, I can't remember if we were in a hotel or something like that, and he had his acoustic guitar, and that's how we kind of wrote it, and I used that line, and then I felt, you know, like I satisfied everybody for, you know, taking the effort to get one of their lyrics and putting it into a song. So that was that, and then anytime... I wrote that with Greg Raleigh at his house, and then when we were divvying up the credits for the album, he told me that he had written that music with about 9 other guys.
Oh, wow.
So that's when you see, if you look at any time, there's all these names underneath it. It looks like, you know, but it was just basically he felt obligated to recognize the people that he had, you know, written that music for, you know, with. So that's what happened. But I wrote the lyrics and I wrote the melody for that song.
Yeah, another
and
great
then,
tune.
And then Neil and I wrote "Winds of March" together.
Okay, cool.
And he had written some music with his dad. And he gave his dad credit on that,
oh,
too.
Okay.
So there's me and Neil and his dad. But and then there's another song called "All for You" that I wrote with the band all together, I think. And that's on the Times 3 album.
Right.
Or CD or cassette decks or whatever you want to call it.
Now, and that record, that came out a lot later, right? So that song... wasn't
yeah,
really
it was like
released.
A compilation.
Okay.
Thing, I think.
So they just kind of had that in the vaults, I guess.
Right, right. It was a nostalgia kind of thing. But I'm glad that it got out there. And those are all demos, you know. And all the, right. It's kind of funny. Those are all demos.
Right, right. And so you do some great songwriting with them, and you are out playing gigs with them too, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, yes.
How long were you out playing shows with them?
I think we were out for at least 7 months.
Wow.
or maybe more. We first started out from San Francisco to Texas, and we did a bunch of shows with REO Speedwagon and did some shows with Judas Priest. When they had just come out to the States.
Wow.
And that was interesting. And so we did a whole sort of like a Texas circuit, like we did Dallas and Houston and Corpus Christi and it's that other place, beautiful town.
Austin?
Where they have the big festival there.
Yeah, Austin.
Yeah,
South
Austin,
by Southwest, yeah.
How could I forget that? Anyway, Austin. And then we continued on towards the east. And then I think we came back, and then we went to Hawaii and did the Crater Festival there. And there's some video from that show on YouTube also. I think some guy just had a camera, like a camera or a video camera, and the sound is from the camera. So it's not off the board or anything like that. So,
no, you said when you were...
And after that, I think we did some shows in California. Oh, no. We got on board with... we opened up for Emerson, Lake & Palmer throughout Canada.
Wow, cool.
Also.
Now, you mentioned Judas Priest going out with you guys. I'm assuming they were opening for Journey, right?
Yeah, they were opening up, and then we played, and then I think REO Speedwagon was playing, if I remember right.
Yeah, okay. So you do this extensive touring with them, it sounds like, basically a lot of shows. Sounds like some of them were pretty high profile shows. What happened? How did you end up exiting the band before?
The way that happened was, one of the biggest gigs that we did was at Soldier Field in Chicago.
Wow.
And that was pretty incredible.
The stadium, yeah.
We played with Ted Nugent, Leonard Skinner, 38 Special, Cheap Trick, Journey. I think that was it, I think.
And at these shows, were you already playing some of the new songs that you had written with the band, like Wheel in the Sky?
Yeah, what would happen was they would play about one or two songs, and then Greg Raleigh would introduce me. And then I would come on up stage, and then all the Journey fans that were just, you know, devout, occult, religion-style fans were out there, and right. They would flip me off. The whole front row would just have just give me the bird.
Right.
And so I had to go up there and hit a home run every time, you know.
Yeah.
We opened up with Wheel in the Sky and Anytime and Winds of March and a couple other ones that we were doing also. And then I would sing along and with other songs that Journey had done. I'd do some songs with Greg Raleigh, doubling up and stuff like that. But that's what would happen. And but the way it all dissipated was Herbert, their manager, he wanted me to sign a deal with him, and I'd have already signed a deal with Barry Fay, who got me involved in it, you know, from the get-go.
Right.
And Barry Fay was a big music promoter like Bill Graham, but he was based out of Colorado, and he pretty much did all the rock and roll shows in the Midwest.
Okay.
If you don't know who he was, a very powerful person. But anyway, so he wanted me to dump Barry, and I couldn't dump Barry. And I just said, look, you guys have to figure out what you're going to do, and because I can't leave Barry. And I understand where Herbie's coming from, but you guys have to work it out. Well, at the same time, there was a guy down in L.A. that was an A&R guy at CBS, and he was funding Steve Perry's demos.
Okay.
And he was really liking them, and he was bugging Herbie about, you know, trying out Steve. So. Between all the pressure between me and Herbie and my manager and all that was going on, Herbie just decided that I don't want to have to deal with the pressure from Robert, and I don't want to deal with the pressure from Barry. So I'm going to go with Steve Perry. And
wow.
The thing was is that this guy, the A&R guy, was telling Herbie that if he took Steve, that he would give him a bigger budget, give him a good producer, give him more tour money and all this in radio play. So it was sort of like, you know, the make him an offer you can't refuse, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Like mafia, like right. Godfather kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
So I understand what they did, and what he did was, you know, he got more money and more fuel, you know, to make it happen. So, and Herbie is a wonderful guy. I mean, I know what he had to do to make that band happen.
Right.
You know, he sold that band like a candy bar, man.
Yeah. Right on. Right on. And were you able to, did they like buy out your songwriting royalties, or were you able to
No, they didn't buy out. Yeah. I had my publishing, and they had their share, and I had my share. We just split up everything real,
right.
You know, clean.
Well, that's good.
And I'm still friends with them and always have been.
Cool.
And I received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame with them.
Very cool.
And I see them every time I, you know, they come into town, wherever I am.
Right on. So,
yeah, so
there's a big stretch between when the Vinnie Vincent Invasion record came out in 1986 and when we're talking about, and you know, which I think we're looking at like 1977, 78, I would think, is when you exited the Journey fold.
Yeah, after you're asking what I did after the Journey.
Yeah, well, I know there was a solo record that came out, right?
Right. I did a solo album for Arista Records, and I did that with Jimmy Iovine.
Right.
He helped produce it, and Shelly Yakis, who was this engineer, and he had just gotten off the project with working on the. Working in some capacity on the Walls and Bridges album with Lennon.
Ah, wow.
And he had done work with Patti Smith with Here Come the Night.
Right.
Yeah. So I went to New York and I made an album with him, and then after that I toured. Opening up for Van Halen on that album.
Wow, excellent! Any memories you can share of on being on the road with Eddie, Dave, and Michael and Alex?
Yeah,
did you have much interaction with them?
Yeah, I did. I actually had a lot of interaction with Michael and Alex and Eddie. But I never talked to Dave. Dave was very, let's say he was just rude to me.
Really? Wow.
And, but Eddie and the guys would stand on the side of the stage and watch me do like a couple of numbers and then go back to their dressing room to get ready. And, you know, and then I would see them in the hallway and I would talk to Eddie and, you know, he was... I don't know if he was joking or whatever. You go, I wish we had you for our singer like this.
Really?
And
wow.
I'm like, yeah, you know. And but so I imagine, I guess, you know, shit was flying back then with all of them, with David, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the Running with the Devil tour, which was what, 77, 78, something.
Well,
like that.
Yeah, the first that was on the first, yeah, Van Halen record, which came out in 78. So,
yeah,
absolutely, great stuff. And so the solo record was out. We're talking like late 70s period right now. And so, going into the early 80s, where did you find yourself musically?
I ended up doing another record called Channel for Epic Records, and I did that one in England. And so it didn't really see the light of day because it was stupidly handled the way everything was done. Like, I don't think we should have gone to England to record it. I think we should have done it in L.A. and saved a lot of money and everything. And because when you're have six people or five people in a band, you know, and you're all have to pay for hotels and food and, you know, all that stuff. It just bites into the budget. And it was just a stupid move.
Right.
But it wasn't my idea to do that. It was the producer.
Oh,
so okay. He wanted a vacation in England on our dime, basically. So, So I did that. And then after that, I was just really discontent with the whole circus. You know, I just didn't want to be back in a freaking band again.
Yeah.
So, I got a gig being a staff writer for Almo Irving Publishing, which was part of A&M Records.
Right. Okay. Cool.
So I was a staff writer for them for like about 3.5 years. And all I had to do is write 10 songs that they liked. And, you know, I got a check in the mail.
Wow.
So, you know, I lived like that for a while and, you know, and then, I got, a call from, Vinnie Vincent, and I met with him during that time, during the '80s. And then, you know, the big box of spiders opened up.
Right. Now, when you say you got a call from Vinnie Vincent, had he known a friend of yours, or what was the connection there? How did he end up calling you?
I was friends with Adam Mitchell.
Okay.
And he wrote songs with Paul Stanley.
Right. All right. Right.
Okay. So, I guess, you know, Adam is in the Kiss family there, so he met Vinny, I guess. And Vinny, I don't know if Vinny auditioned for them, or somehow they met.
Right.
And my name was brought up, and Vinny called me up, and I met with Vinny, and I thought, you know, he was an incredible guitar player and singer and songwriter.
And had you been aware of his work with Kiss? I mean, or
no,
not?
No, no, because he wasn't with Kiss then.
Right.
This was before Kiss.
Oh, okay. I'm following you. All right.
Yeah,
wow,
this is before Kiss, and we were already putting stuff together. And then one day he calls me up and goes, "Hey, I got this. You know, Kiss asked me to be in the band."
Wow.
And I said, "Do it," you know, because he was living in this tiny little apartment. And his wife just had twins, and, you know, I said, "You need to, you know, get some moolah and, you know, make a change for your whole family, so go for it," you know. And then a few months, you know, I don't know, how long was he with them, a year or whatever?
You know, well, he had done some songwriting and studio work, you know, before he was technically an official member of the band. But, geez, I'd have to look. But I'm guessing it was, you know, two to maybe 3 years tops, probably less than 3 years. But, you know, two and a half years, yeah.
Yeah, so then he, after, I guess, all that time, you know, he gave me a shout again and wanted to do this thing.
Right. So
I did it with him just in because it was going to be a partnership. But he ended up making a deal with Chrysalis for himself, and I wasn't involved in the partnership. And that's when everything got really squirrely.
Okay, so this deal for yourself, or for himself, is this after you had already recorded the record?
This was when we had done the demos for the record.
Okay.
And he played the demos for Chrysalis, and they flipped for it.
Wow. Okay. So you still agree, though, even though you're unhappy that he's done this deal without
you. Yeah,
some
time went, and I just said, "Well, if I'm going to do this, I want this," you know.
Right.
And so I was given what I asked for.
Okay. Cool. And you had, I think, was it two or three co-writes on the record?
I wrote Invasion.
Right.
And I wrote Do You Want to Make Love with Him.
Cool. And were there other songs that you had written with him for around that time frame?
Yeah, there were other songs, but we never got around to them.
Right. And there was a song on the record I wanted to ask you about called Back on the Streets, which is just a great tune. And I mean, your voice
right.
just sells the song. But it kind of had this weird kind of history in the Kiss family there. I remember that Ace Frehley had been playing it out live like in 1984, 85, before he had released his first post-Kiss record. There was a version, I guess, that was recorded by Kiss and never released. And then
I didn't know that.
Yeah, for the Creatures of the Night record, there is a Vinny has actually said
and
there
some
was
some other guy did too. Some other guy did too. I think there's a there's like about a handful of five different versions of that, isn't there?
I
understand.
Yeah, but I mean, the one on the Invasion record was the first, I think, to come out. It was the first time I'd ever heard it. Any stories or anything behind that specific song?
No, nothing really, you know,
okay.
Nothing freaky happened. I'll tell you, the first day I went to the studio to do vocals, because everything was pretty much, all the songs were written. I mean, all the music was written with a drum machine. And then later on, he had Bobby Rock overdub over the drum machine. So I was singing to a drum machine, and the guitars, And so he had a vocal booth. And when I walked into the vocal booth for the first time, he had it wallpapered inside with Playboy centerfolds from,
wow,
from floor to ceiling.
Right.
So it was kind of funny, you know. I told him it was going to take a lot more than that to get me off.
But, right. there you go.
That was freaky. And then, you know, there's always the story about him peeing on his guitar in the studio. And I was there when that happened. And
What's the story behind that? Can you tell us that one again?
He was doing a lead solo, and he kept getting out of tune, and he was, like, blaming his guitar or something like that, and he just got so frustrated that he just slammed that guitar onto the hardwood floor inside the control room, and just, next thing you know, he just fucking starts pissing on it. And we're just like, what the fuck is going on here, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, everybody, I walked out. I just completely walked out. But we couldn't get in that studio for like 3 or 4 days because of the fucking condensation.
Wow. Wow. And
it was horrible.
Yes.
And so then he's telling this guy to go clean it up. And I'm telling the guy, don't you clean it up.
Yeah.
I said, you just come on with me. You walk out with me. You know?
And
so there was stupid stuff like that happening, you know?
And, you know, so you're...
But on the other hand, yeah. he was always very generous and very nice to me with the utmost respect. And, you know, it's just a shame that, you know, his history and everybody knows it, you know, the things that he's done and the way he is. And it's just too bad because he's just such an incredible, talented guitar player. He plays heavy metal, you know, yeah, but he can play anything, jazz, right, country, whatever, you know, he's amazing. And it's
absolutely
just a shame that it just disappeared. And, and he's just made bad choices, you know, and it's sad.
And do you have any, I mean, when's the last time you spoke with him? I mean, I know you eventually circled back around
30-something years.
Right. Okay. Cause you did at some point circle back around and do some more work with him, right?
Yeah. And it was just because I felt bad for the guy, you know? And if I could help him, it would help me. But the point is, it's just, he, no matter what, he always just sabotaged it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And
you shoot yourself in the foot constantly.
You know, there had been rumors about the Vinnie Vincent Invasion record and the fact that Vinnie was playing so fast on that record. There was this one rumor that used to, you know, circulate my high school when I was a kid, and I wanted to ask you to confirm or deny it. Did Vinnie slow down the tapes and then play as fast as he could? And then, no, he did not. Okay, so...
No.
That is the speed that he is playing at that we're hearing in the record.
Yeah, he was incredible.
Right. Wow.
I watched him do solos. I suggested little melodies and solos or whatever, but he was the gunslinger, you know. He was the fastest draw in the West there in the room.
Yeah. And had you had a plan to exit the band after the recording was done, or when did you actually decide that, hey, this isn't going to be for me?
What happened was, there was this guy named, who used to be a road manager for Kiss, George Sewitt.
Yeah, he was, I believe, a tour manager for Kiss, and he went on to manage Ace for a while in the 90s.
Yeah, and then he ended up doing Vinny.
Okay.
And I didn't like George. And George had said that to Chrysalis Records that he was managing me. And at one of the at a meeting or something like that, George came to me actually at the photo shoot or something like that, a stupid photo shoot. He came to me with a contract that's like, you know, 2 yellow pages thick and tells me to sign it. And I told him, I'm not going to sign it. I'll take it to my lawyer though. But no, you got to sign it right now because, and everything's okay. It's fine. So I found out that he pressured me that way was because he had told Chrysalis that I was under his management, and they found out that I wasn't, and they
right.
pissed at him and they fired him.
Wow.
And, so then, you know, I just said, enough's enough. You know, it's just been a box of spiders from the very get go, and I just didn't want to have anything to do with it. And then Chrysalis offered me a deal if I would go back and do this whole thing, and I said no. And then the next time I ever had any contact with them was when they played the Boys Are Going to Rock video with Mark Slaughter's lip syncing to my voice.
Yeah, right. And what was that contact?
That was about it.
What was that contact? Were you upset that the fact they had him lip syncing to your voice, or?
Yeah, I think wouldn't you be, Mark?
Yes, I would be. I would be. Yeah, absolutely. So
yeah, so I sued Chrysalis. And I won, and it was like the first Milli Vanilli.
Yeah.
That was really the first Milli Vanilli situation on MTV.
Yeah, that's a good point, definitely. And what about Dana Strum? Did you have a okay relationship with him or not?
I really don't care for him. No, I don't like what he, I don't like his moral compass, let's say that.
Okay. But Bobby Rock obviously is back in the fold, and he's going to be on your new record, which I think is just incredible.
Yeah, he's an incredible person. I've known him for years, and like when he would come by my house, if you were ever near my house, he would come by and we'd chat, and it was always great to see him. And I saw him last summer, you know, playing with Luda.
Cool.
So we hadn't seen each other in a long time. We got some good photos with ourselves together, and, you know, it was good times.
Excellent. And, you know, there's just so much history to still talk about here. I mean, you went on and had many other releases and songs and records that came out through the years, but I want to jump forward a little bit just in the matter of time, being that we're already at 45 minutes here, and talk about The Sky and some of your more recent stuff that you've been working on. Can you tell us a little history behind The Sky, who's involved, how it all came about?
Okay. Well, after I received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, Journey was going to do a show at the House of Blues on Sunset Strip in California, in L.A. And so I went to the sound check with them, you know, hanging out with them, and they asked me if I'd be interested in coming up and doing Wheel in the Sky. So I said, yeah, and I hadn't been on stage in a long time, and, you know, later on that night, I got up on stage, and I sang Wheel in the Sky, and I just realized how much I had missed being on stage and, you know, seeing all the people and just having that, you know, music blasting behind you and my voice coming out of there, and I just wanted to do it again. So, a friend of mine, Andre LaBelle, who played on some of Vinnie Vincent's projects, he lived in Richmond, Virginia. He had called me up and wanted to congratulate me, and I told him that I was, you know, thinking about putting a band together, and he said, look, if you're going to put a band together, I want to play drums. You know, I want to play, and I know some great people, and out here in Richmond, Virginia, and if you're interested, come on out. And so I thought about it, and I flew out to Richmond, and stayed there for about a week and played with a lot of different people. And I just fell in love with this group of people that I had assembled, and decided to move. So I moved to Richmond from L.A. and assembled this band, and you know, got like a loft, and rehearsed, wrote the first album there, and recorded it. And then eventually we did some shows around Richmond. We did a I don't know if we did some videos, but some videos.
Right.
And then we were supposed to go on the road, but the tour got canceled because the promoter or the booking agent had the cancer, got leukemia or whatever.
Oh boy.
And so he was a one man operation, so we had nobody to fall back on, and so that kind of like fell through. And so I decided, well, I'm going to write another album. So we wrote another album, and then it came out last year, well, be 2 years ago, I guess, in November or March, Majestic, which is available on theskyofficial.com. You can get CDs there. The first one sold out. Haven't made any new pressings of that yet, but going to.
Okay.
But Majestic's there. You can hear some of this music on the website, which is theskyofficial.com. And that album is I really love. There's a video called One Day, which is on YouTube.
Right.
And there's another one called Boomerang.
Boomerang, yeah, which I saw.
Which
Good
is
stuff,
from the
yeah.
first album, which is from the first Sky album, I believe. No, that's on Majestic. Anyway, Andre LaBelle plays drums on it, and I have Brady Cole who plays lead guitar, and Ryan Lake, who plays rhythm, and bass player-wise, we had a guy named John Sullivan and Steve Barber. Was
cool.
playing on the original stuff. And I'm going to come back and do another album with him after I do this solo album with all these great players that I mentioned earlier.
Okay, cool, because that was my next mm-hmm. question. Is there a future for the Sky, being that you're doing a solo record?
Oh,
it sounds
yeah,
like
yeah,
absolutely. Okay, good.
Yeah, absolutely. I will do another record with him and hopefully do some shows. I think we're talking about possibly going to Europe, Germany, and do some shows and branch out from there.
Excellent. Excellent. Cool.
Yeah.
All right, guys, stay tuned, because we're going to actually hear a little music by the Sky coming up in just a few minutes. But I just kind of wanted to wrap things up with you, Robert, and just tell you it's been such a great honor. And I really think you have so many stories that involve so many rock stars and big names, and just your story on its own is just an incredible tale. You should consider writing a book. Is that something you'd ever consider doing?
You know, people say that, but I'm always afraid nobody's going to buy it. Right.
Well, I would buy it. You have at least one person here who would buy it.
You know,
I think there'd be a lot more.
I appreciate it. It's hard enough getting people to buy your CDs, let alone a book.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right on.
I kind of look at it that way, because I don't know, man. Just the way the industry is and the way that people are, it's sad, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it definitely is.
They just they go through your album, they go, oh, I like that one song, boom, you know, because it hits them automatically. But, you know, how many albums have you ever listened to that just grow on you and just like, oh, God, you know, you can't. You know, that one song, yeah, I did like, but man, now it makes sense with that one song I really like and the other ones, you know, it makes a great picture, piece of art, you know? It's like picking out one color.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you, definitely. Okay, Robert, well, it's been so great talking with you. And what song can we play for the Talking Metal listeners by the Sky to take us out here tonight?
Oh, boy. How about, I don't know. What kind of mood you guys in?
Well, you know, most of our listeners are hard rockers who like kind of the old school, you know, 80s hard rock sound. So That's usually the mood we're in.
Why don't you just pick what you think? I'm not a good gauge on that.
Well, I tell you, I heard this one on YouTube, and I think it's just a great song. The song Boomerang. So maybe we'll go out with that.
Let's get in with that, then.
Yeah, let's do that. So this is Boomerang by The Sky, and you are listening to Talking Metal.
Broken memories of a
What you just heard was a little Robert Fleischman and his band, The Sky, here on Talking Metal. It was great talking with Robert. I know, Mitch, you talked with him back in, what was that, 2015.
I was going to say earlier this year, but we've actually flipped the calendar. So, no, about 6 months ago, we had a nice chat with him. That episode also features a nice conversation with Rob Halford of Judas Priest. And so, no, I love Robert. He was just very forthcoming, great storyteller. And, good. It was good to have him on Talking Metal as well.
So, Mitch, let's talk about the song Back on the Streets, which was a part of that Vinnie Vincent Invasion record. But the song has more of a history than just that. First, I used to have this bootlegged cassette of Ace Frehley playing at L'Amour's in Brooklyn, I believe it was. Brooklyn, right? Yeah, and he, at that show, this was like a 1985 bootleg, maybe 84, I'm not sure. But at that show, he played Back on the Streets, which is kind of interesting because it's a song that would go on to end up on, again, the Vinnie Vincent Invasion record. But we've also heard, and I know Kiss mentions this in one of their official books, that there is a Kiss version of the song with Paul Stanley singing lead vocals on it. And do you think that's where Ace first discovered the song?
Yeah, listen, Vinnie brought the song in for the Creatures of the Night sessions back in 81 or 82, and they had demoed it and ended up not using it, which is a shame because I've heard the Paul Stanley version. You can go over to YouTube and just type in Back on the Streets, Paul Stanley, or Kiss, and it pops up.
Oh, I didn't know it was up on YouTube.
Oh, wow, that's something. Yeah, it is, and it sounds great. And this, you know, it's a great, great song. And that's the thing about Vinny. You can't deny that he's a great songwriter. I will argue that his guitar playing is not tasteful and doesn't play for the song, but that's a part. He writes great songs. Back on the Street, Ace was going to cover it or was going to record it for one of his albums. Never happened, but as you mentioned, he played it live. John Norum from Europe on one of his solos albums covered it. Who else covered it? Well, Vinny, of course, made a cover. So it's been around. It's a great song, and I had it covered for this Kiss tribute, A World with Heroes, that I did back in 2013. Yes. And it was a great version. Now, the 2013 version features Richie Scarlett of Ace's band currently doing the vocal. John Regan plays bass on it. Todd Howarth adds some guitar and does some backing vocals on it. And I think you've got Sandy Slavin on drums. So it's just a great, great version. And you can go find it at iTunes. It's part of the A World with Heroes Deluxe Edition just for iTunes. And hey, I hope you enjoy hearing it on the show here. And I hope you'll run out and get a copy of it, because it's a...
Yeah, you can buy it on iTunes, and again, all the proceeds go to just a great cause. Tell us where the money goes again.
Well, the money goes over to a palliative care home in Vaudreuil-Dorion, Quebec, Canada. My wife's father passed away there in 2013, and thus was the genesis of this tribute album. It was to have these monies come in, and you know, my wife wanted to make like $100 donation. It's just like, well, that's not enough. I mean, they took care of your dad for 4 months. Let's up the ante. And so far, we've raised $35,000 in 2 years. So those iTunes contributions still dribble in, and they still help, and we're still able to send off $500 here, $1,000 there. So if you want to check it out, A World with Heroes on iTunes.
Let's give it a listen right now. What you just heard was Back on the Streets off the World with Heroes CD. Go buy it on iTunes or where can you get the CD? The CD is still available, right, Mitch?
No, well, I literally have 6 copies of the CD, and in fact, they're right behind me. I could reach one. We only printed up 1,000, and the deal was once they're done, they're done. This wasn't going to be some kind of business venture. This was really for the charity. So we've left it up in memoriam on iTunes that you can download at any time. But the physical copies, I've got 6 left. If anybody's interested, I'll be more than happy to sell them to you. You can send an email to Mark, and he'll send it over to me. But that's it. Once they're done, they're done. And we even had to put a couple in the safety deposit box because should anything happen to the house, a flood, a fire or something, there's no other copies, right?
So right.
That's it. That's all, folks.
Right. Cool. Well, right now, let's get into a song called Shoot You Full of Love. This is off of the Vinnie Vincent Invasion record, so we will check it out now. Written by Vinnie Vincent and Dana Strum on bass on this one, Bobby Rock on the drums, and Robert Fleischman on vocals. Here on Talking Metal, Shoot You Full of Love, 30 years old from 1986 by the Vinnie Vincent Invasion.
I want it.
What you just heard was Shoot You Full of Love by the Vinnie Vincent Invasion here on Talking Metal. And Mitch, to wrap things up today, I want to play a song that doesn't feature Robert Fleischman on vocals, but he is a songwriter on it. And this is a Journey song called Anytime. And a lot of people know that he wrote, co-wrote A Wheel in the Sky,
right.
But a lot of people might not know that he is also a songwriter on this this song called Anytime. Yep. And this is from the Infinity record, which was a really important record for Journey, because it's one of the records, in my opinion, that made Journey a household name, made them mainstream. And you cannot deny Robert's involvement with this record. You know, it had the song Lights on it, which was a Steve Perry, Neil Sean co-write, one of the first songs that they wrote with Steve when he joined the band. But you also had a lot of these songs that were basically leftovers from the time they were working with Robert right before Steve Perry joined. And Wheel in the Sky was one of them, one of the biggest Journey songs ever. And Robert has a co-write on that. And he also has a co-write on this song. Again, it's called Anytime. It's off the Infinity record, going way back to 1978. And that'll wrap things up for today's episode of Talking Metal. Mitch, thanks so much for joining us. We encourage all the Talking Metal listeners to check out your podcast, One-on-One with Mitch LaFon, which is available to everyone right on TalkingMetal.com, as well as all your other regular podcasting outlets. Where are you on Twitter? You want to...
Yeah.
Have people connect with you there?
Absolutely. I love folks out on Twitter. At Mitch LaFon, MitchLaFon, at Mitch LaFon on Twitter. And, please come over, check out the show, see if there's anything you like. Coming up soon, we've got Vivian Campbell of Def Leppard talking to us. I think that'll be a good one.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait to hear what he has to say about the Def Leppard cruise. It sounds like... Obviously, the tragedy with Jimmy Bain, yeah, but it sounds like there were a lot of other issues too,
and none that can be accountable that the band can be accountable for. I mean, the fact that there's torrential rain, it bad luck, right?
It's I did hear they were selling tickets to. It just wasn't Def Leppard fans. You know, there were other people on the boat too.
Yeah, well, that's the one thing about all those cruises, those rock and roll cruises, is. If the boat sells out at 100%, then you got 100% fans. But a lot of times, whether it's Kiss or Def Leppard or Monsters, it sells at 60%, 70%. And of course, the boats don't leave empty or half full, so they sell them to a secondary market. So you got a lot of vacationers that are trying to get a cheap cruise for half the price. And so, yeah, you share the space with grandma, grandpa, or some guy who's never heard of the bands, and they just wanted a cheap cruise. But that's just the way the biz goes, right?
Right. Well. Anyways, we're going to wrap things up right now. This is Anytime by Journey. Big thanks to Mitch for hanging with us today, and also to Robert for speaking with us. And check Mitch and I out also on Metal Raps. It's a podcast we do with Mitch Joel, and it's a lot of fun. So here we go. Anytime by Journey.
Ooh, anytime that you want me. Ooh, anytime that you need me. To take it away out of the shade.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.